So we'll see what they do there. Skid Marks, appreciate your super chat. I'm going to ask Rick Saratella this question as well and get his perspective. Maybe he doesn't agree at all, but I will ask him that when he joins us. We're going to talk to Rick Saratella now, at Rick Saratella, author of the NFL Draft Bible. He just sent me it, and boy, is it good. Let's get to Rick Saratella right now, joining us on Birds 365. Rick, welcome to the show, man. 9 days until the Rick Saratella Super Bowl, as I like to call it, the NFL Draft. How you doing on this Tuesday morning, brother?
You know what? I'm doing great, gentlemen. Thanks for having me on. And now it's the sprint, right? We got through the marathon the past 356 days or whatever it is. Now we're at the sprint, so we can see the finish line.
Let's pick on the Giants right away, Rick, because I always love when I see this late. Now all of a sudden, well, they're not taking Sanders. You know, he's not going two. He's not going three. And then you start talking about Vegas or the Saints and what Kellen Moore is going through. And maybe those teams, Cleveland and the Giants, trade back in to get him a little bit later. But all of a sudden, the New York Giants brass is going out to do a personal sort of workout with Shador. Now, my take on that, and I want to get your take on it. For people that don't know, the coaches get involved very late in the process when it comes to evaluating players. You know, mainly it's scouts, personnel. And then the coaches come in late. So maybe Brian Daboll is kind of pushing in that direction. But more to me, this is where the owners tend to get involved, especially when it comes to quarterbacks. And if the owner steps in, which is always a bad idea, but they do it, that can impact things very greatly on the draft board. When you say something like that, when you see something like that happen so late in the process, what does Rick Saratella think?
Well, what I think, Mac, is, you know, I was in attendance at the East-West Shrine Bowl where there was minuscule media in terms of national media, zero Giants presence in terms of beat writers. None of them were out there. So they've been bamboozled by this propaganda that I'm not buying for a second, because anyone who watched NFL games last year saw Russell Wilson is not a winning quarterback in the National Football League. So can you imagine being a general manager and going into combat with Russell Wilson as your quarterback? I don't buy it. I think this was planned all along. Joe Shane and Brian Daboll were the only GM and head coach in attendance at the East-West Shrine Bowl. They had almost nearly 30 front office personnel and executives in Dallas for the whole week, whining and dining Shador Sanders. I saw it with my own eyes. So all of a sudden now, they fell out of love with Shador Sanders. I'm not buying it, guys. And the late pro day was pre-planned by his father, the whole camp. They got together. They said, we'll do a late pro day. We'll do late private workouts. They want to end this thing with a bang. I don't think this is all of a sudden, like the Giants season was over before the Yankees. So Brian Daboll has been involved in this process since December. You know, I don't think this is all of a sudden now just coming to fruition, guys. This has been percolating for months.
That's true. The season was over pretty quickly. You're right about that. From the standpoint, and I know you're higher on Shador than I think most at this point.
Yeah, you got him as your top rated quarterback, Rick.
No doubt. Yeah, I mean, what this guy has gone through and the criticism, like there's been some highly criticized quarterbacks like Johnny Manziel, Tim Tebow. You want to go back to Ryan Leaf. Like, I'll put Shador Sanders right up top with all of them. Like, this guy can do no right. You know, he didn't get any credit for Travis Hunter participating in the pro day. Travis Hunter, if you watch the NFL Network coverage when they came on air, they said Travis Hunter won't be working out. Well, what happened? Oh, the intangibles occurred. The leadership of Shador Sanders occurred. He said, guys, like, yo, it's our last ride. I need you out here. Let's go. And he motivated Travis Hunter to come out and work out as a wide receiver. Like, he gets no credit for any of this. Shador Sanders was like, you saw all those receivers, Jimmy Horn, Will Shepard, LaJonte Wester. Who do you think recruited them? Not Coach Prime. Shador Sanders recruited these guys to Colorado. He rebuilt two college programs from the ground floor up. He gets zero credit for any of this. I just don't get it. If he's not a franchise quarterback, then my name's not Rick Saratella. Save this tape.
All right. I love it. I love people that go against the grain. Because, you know, I just mentioned Jeffrey Lurie. You know, one of the things Jeffrey said is you can't worry about being popular, man, when you're in the draft. You can't worry about it. and you can't worry about the, you see this group think it happens every year, Rick, and you get all this hate mail. I'm sure you get it. I get it. If you dare say something that isn't everybody lined up and back of you. And it happens every year, but you know, last year, right at the top of the draft, I said Jaden Daniels. I like Jaden Daniels better than Caleb Williams. I got ripped. Some did, some didn't. But you know, where are they 12 months later? Not that Caleb Williams. Well, I still think he's got a chance to be a very good player, especially now that they've gotten a better offensive coach around him. And I thought that was a great quarterback draft. But one of the things I think is interesting is how many quarterbacks you have going now in that top 10. Is that a good thing? Because when I talk to personnel people, Rick, they're not in love with the top of this draft. You know, 20 to 50, that's where a lot of them say you can make your hay and get starters. But at the top of the draft, and one thing, there's been no trades, Rick. No trades in the first round. When's the last time that happened?
Yeah, I think it's the first time since the turn of the century. I mean, and it's a supply and demand league. Like when there's not franchise, quote unquote, quarterbacks to trade up for, you're not going to see it. But then again, like what did like three first round picks to move up and go get Mac Jones a couple years ago? So like, yeah, I mean, draft day.
Yeah,
you could see some moving and shaking when things don't occur the way that the script is supposed to. And that's why, like, I still see four quarterbacks in round one because there's just too many teams that need one. Like, you look at Cleveland, you look at the Giants, you look at the Steelers, you look at the Saints, right? There's a lot of talk that the Rams might get a QB on the back burner to groom. Like, there's about a half a dozen teams still in the market for a quarterback. So when there's only two franchise quarterbacks, and then I'll throw Jackson Dart and Jalen Milroe in that tier two category, like, You said like Bo Nix, nobody who had him going number.
Yeah.
Like, however high he went. Man. Michael Penix, right? I was one of the few that raised my hand that it was a Michael Penix believer. Hindsight's 20/20, but you know, this quarterback class has been beaten down saying, "Oh, it's not a great quarterback." Well, yeah, it doesn't have six first round quarterbacks, but I look ahead to next year. Like the quarterback class, there's no guarantee locks. Everybody loves Arch Manning. You want to say Lenore Sellers. I mean, look at this kid Nico from Tennessee. You want that guy as the franchise quarterback? I don't think so. So, like, you know, teams are going to have to go and identify their guy and figure out, like, the Pittsburgh Steelers, do they want to go in a war with Mason Rudolph? I think not. You know? I mean, like, look at some of the quarterbacks hanging out. Like, Cleveland Browns going to go into week one with Kenny Pickett as their starter. I find that hard to believe. So I think there are going to be some moving and shaking come draft day. Right now, everybody's playing poker.
Yeah, by the way, how could people, and one of the great things about the NFL Draft Bible, I encourage everybody to get it, allaccessfootball.com. What are you at, 350, 360 pages? So everything you need to know, make sure you go there and get it before the draft. Like, how can scouts be so sold on Arch Manning other than the surname? I love the surname. I mean, Quinn Ewers, he couldn't beat out Quinn Ewers, who is okay. I think he's going to be a long-term backup in the NFL, but yeah, he's not Andrew Luck. I think everybody wait till next year, but I see what you're saying there. Other than Arch Manning because of the name, Garrett Nussmeier because of the name. Yeah, maybe they turn into great quarterbacks, but you don't know that. You mentioned a kid from Tennessee. Boy, that's an interesting situation. Holding out in college football.
Just
we'll see if it works out for him.
Right. Yeah. And if you look back, I think, you know, you mentioned the Arch Manning recruiting class. Like, I think every quarterback from that class has already transferred except for Arch Manning, and they got, you know, he made $2 million as a backup in Texas last year. Kind of money they got in Austin.
No reason for him to transfer there. How do you guys evaluate that? Because, you know, I heard somebody yesterday talking about it, and they're like, college coaches have been doing this for years, going to get the bigger buck, you know, and now all of a sudden the players doing, everybody wants to crush him. I see both sides. I'm with you, Rick, and I'm like, I don't know if I want that guy leading my franchise in the future. But in the same breath, Nico might be like, I don't know if I'm an NFL quarterback. Let me maximize my potential for earnings right now. Again, I'm not saying I like his approach. I'm just saying don't hate the player, hate the game. They've opened up this can of worms with college football. I don't think it's going to be put back in the can either.
Yeah, you know, I think because it's new, it rubs people the wrong way. But by the time we get to next year's draft, I think you'll have several instances. I mean, the UNLV quarterback did this in season. It wasn't as a power four program or as a high profile player. But like, remember when Christian McCaffrey opted out of the bowl game? He got murdered for it. They killed the kid. Now it's like par for the course. Now I'm actually surprised when a high profile prospect plays in the bowl game, right?
Yeah.
And so I think you're going to start. And I heard a rumor the Tennessee kid might wind up with Billy Belichick down there on Tar Heel Road.
Yeah. So, Mike Lombardi was hinting big news. So I think you might be right.
Yeah. With the Nico guy, you mean? Yeah. So let's see what happens there. That should be interesting.
And then all of a sudden he gets with Bill Belichick, his image, his profile, it's rehabbed, right? Like,
It is funny how it all changes too. You guys remember a couple months ago when Cam Ward left his bowl game after halftime, and everybody's like, oh, I'm not taking him as my friend. He's going to be the number one overall pick. You know, a lot of the stuff is here today, gone tomorrow.
Now, and that one, Xander, I got to say, that one bothered me because teammates hanging. Like, it was 28-27 at halftime, I think. They lost the game by 1 point. Like, you talk about a sour note on your whole collegiate career.
I'm with you, Rick.
Competitors. You play the first half, but you can't play the second half. Buckle up, put your big boy pants on. Let's go.
Yeah. I'm with you, Rick. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, you got to evaluate it all, and that's part of it.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
But, if you're talented, you're going to rise to the top no matter what. That to me is more about, you know, you're going to take a hit if you're a third or fourth round pick and you do something like that. But if you're a top 10 pick, it's like Jimmy Johnson always says, I'll treat you all fairly, but I'm not going to treat you all the same.
Yeah.
Basically, if you got top 10 level talent, they're going to take you. That's just the way it is. And that's the way it's always going to be. But we are an Eagles show. So number 32, that's where we start with the Eagles, Super Bowl champions. Adam Schefter saying, hey, Howie Roseman's going to make some trades. Thanks, Adam, by the way. It's like, come on.
Is it true? I heard that the Eagles have the most picks as far as a single team.
Yeah, over the next 2 years, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Over the next 2 years. They have four fifth-round picks on day three. That's it right now. They start with four fifth-round picks, and they're all clumped together. I think it's 161, 164, 165, 168. You probably don't want to take four fifth-round picks. So he's going to, especially on day three, I think he's going to move around quite a bit. But
yeah, I think that start of the round four – Right there on day three, you always get a guy.
Yeah.
Right.
The kid, the Ringo, that guy, you always have that guy where you go to bed after day two and you say, oh, wow, that guy's still there.
Right.
Let's go up and get him. Mm-hmm. That happens to a lot of NFL teams. And the Eagles went up near the top of the draft to get Kaylee Ringo a couple of years ago, top of the fourth round. But 32. Well, I look at this draft and I say there's so many edge rushers, so many defensive tackles, and that's a need for the Eagles. And I say if you're playing the odds, wherever that pick is, if Howie trades up to 27 or 28, if he trades back to 36, 37, it's probably going to be a defensive front player. I'm just playing the odds, Rick. There's so many of them.
Yeah, you know, I can see that. And I had a hard time with my latest mock draft because when the Eagles pick comes up, I always try to find a guy in the trenches, whether it be offensive line or defensive line. The percentages just say it's going to be one of those things. But, you know, doing my latest mock draft scenario, I came on the Eagles on the clock, and there was yet to be a safety selected in the first round.
Oh, and so you got both of them. Both of them.
Yeah, right. So, like, for me, I'm not as high on the South Carolina kid, Iman Wari, as others are.
Game tape's not great on him, Rick. I'm with you.
Yeah, because, you know, listen, in the open field, this guy misses a lot of tackles. He's not like a downhill in the box kind of safety. You want to play him as a freelance center fielder and try to use his athleticism there. That's fine. He's one of these guys that jumps through the gymnasium and then you go watch the film. It just doesn't translate.
I agree.
So, I think that's going to be an interesting case study. I actually gave that. I saw somebody in the chat room will like this. I actually gave him Malachi Starks out of Georgia.
There we go. We were talking about it.
Be there, but you know, Georgia, it's go back to the wishing well. Number one safety on the board.
It's worked well for the Eagles.
I find it hard to believe if Malachi Starks is on the clock that they wouldn't go in that direction. And just for whatever it's worth, Billy Bowman out of Oklahoma is my number two safety. And then I got the South Carolina by default, guys, because somebody's going to bet on the traits. Wouldn't be me, but somebody will.
Rick, let me ask you, how do you grade as a draft Nick, as a guy that breaks down these players really all year long? I mean, you already have your 26 prospects. I took a look at them in your draft Bible. You're sitting at 32 and you're the Eagles. Me and John were talking about this, and he just mentioned it. If you get the seventh or the eighth or the ninth best defensive lineman in the draft, just because you're picking at 32, obviously it comes down to whether the team likes the player or not, or you have the top safety in the NFL draft who's still sitting there. How do you balance that as a team of like, do I want to take a defensive lineman because I need him, but he's the eighth best defensive lineman in this draft, let alone the NFL, or a Malachi Starks, who many believe is a day one starter and potentially a long-term safety. Like, how do you balance that, especially for a team like the Eagles right now, who cares about value in those first-round picks?
It's tough because every team has a different philosophy, a different approach. Every individual can see it differently. And I caught some of the conversation, like, in regards to Ashton Jeanty and some of the others that are the top at their position. Like, the tight end, Tyler Warren,
yeah.
Right? I have him as my number three guy in the draft. He's not going to go that high. Why? Because people don't view tight ends as valuable. But, like, if you look at what Brock Bowers brought to the Raiders offense, different style of players, but you look at that kind of impact, I think Tyler Warren could have an even greater impact.
Wow.
So I think what happens
here
–
Tyler Warren is comparable to Brock?
I think he's going to be a – in 5 years, Tyler Warren will probably be the best tight end in the NFL. Wow. I mean, this guy, he's a baby Gronk. He's good.
He's my safest pick in the draft. I always pick the safest guy, and he's my safest guy.
Yeah, and I'll put Gray Zabel out of North Dakota State as one of the safest players, too.
But, yeah, I agree. He's in there. Yeah.
But to the draft philosophy, I mean, like, for me personally, I believe it should be best player available because talent wins in the big leagues, right? The only exception to that rule is quarterback. Like, the Giants would be the exception to the rule this year because you can't win. Like, the common denominator of playoff teams is having a quality quarterback. You got to get that right first. Like, the Patriots now have got it right. They can focus on building the rest of their team. Some teams take a backwards approach, build from the inside out, then go find the quarterback. That's okay too. But until you have a quarterback, you're nothing. You're a nobody in this league. So to me, that's the only exception to the rule. Otherwise, I'm taking best player available every single time. Like, why would I want the eighth best edge rusher if I can have a premium guy? Like, Malachi Starks probably has some Pro Bowls in his future. Like, give me that guy, right? But because he's a safety, these guys are going to get pushed down the board because people don't value them. Same thing with linebackers, right? And so, like, that's where smart teams went out because day two, day three, they're plucking starters.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I think it's so important to win 20 through 50, basically. I think that's where the good teams will make their hay this year. But I there's certain guys, and I rarely see this, and I'm going to throw a couple names at you. I've seen Jihad Campbell everywhere from top 10 to 25.
Yeah.
I've seen Walter Nolan everywhere from, you know, 14, 15 to 32 in the Eagles. Yep. I've seen James Pierce everywhere from 15 to 32 to the Eagles. You rarely see, and there's a number of other ones like that. You rarely see the just the huge sort of outcome possibility. And why do you think that is this year as opposed to other years?
Well, I think the guys that you mentioned all have some character concerns kind of circling around them. As far as James Pierce Jr. from Tennessee, like I tapped into some of my contacts. I think that's more of a media mirage than actual real substance. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. I think Pierce lands somewhere in the top 20. He's just too good. Jahad Campbell, like he might have to redshirt his rookie season. I don't think he's going to be ready for the start of the season. He had that labrum shoulder surgery after the combine. Now I've got him going to the Buccaneers, I believe, at number 19. But like Jahad Campbell, because of the medical, I think he was a medical recheck. Actually, he got called back to Indianapolis. Like I could see him sliding out of the second round due to that. Walter Nolan, you hear immaturity, character concerns. I have him right now going to the Ravens just because like there's going to be a franchise that has strong leadership up top that isn't going to be scared.
Eagles would be that.
Well, yeah. I have Nolan right now at 27 to the Ravens. So like if he falls to 27, are the Eagles in play? Very well could be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting when you see that wild swing with certain prospects. And that's another thing.
Mike Green out of Marshall is another guy, right? Yeah. Like he could go anywhere because of the sexual allegations that he's
Well, that's a weird one because Howie was doing that interview. I don't know if you saw it, Rick, where he's talking about he doesn't even scout guys who have had issues with domestic violence now.
Which, by the way, is a flat-out blatant lie from Howie Roseman.
Well, you know, some of that is, I think, PR.
I think it is.
But you know, at the end of the day, like to your point earlier, if you can help us win a football game, you're going to get a look, right? But, you know, I will say, like, the sexual allegations, there are some people that are just so turned off by that they don't want nothing to do with it, right? So,
Yeah, understandable. I mean, but, you know.
And we're talking about two incidents. Like, the guy was out there at the podium, and he volunteered the information to the media. Like, it must be out there because he said, oh, well, you know, I had some allegations at Virginia, was never charged with anything. Oh, by the way, there was some stuff in high school. The reporter said, well, what happened in high school? Oh, it was another sexual allegation. But don't worry, I wasn't charged with anything.
Trying to get ahead of it, I guess. There's two ways to look at it.
Yeah, but, right.
He is talented. I mean, I think he's just from a pure football perspective. That, you know, that's the point that people like me and reporters, we can't know. There's two things we can't know. The background stuff, and that's why you do all this due diligence, and that's Big Dom's job here in Philadelphia, and the medical stuff. Like, and those are the two biggest parts of the picture. So we're all talking – I'm just talking about Mike Green as a football player, as a pass rusher. That's it. And he's the best pass rusher in this draft from my perspective. And he's the most advanced. He's got the most – like, there's a lot of speed guys, Rick. But he's way ahead of the curve when it comes to counter moves and things like that. Like I made the comparison. He's like an old school starting pitcher. He's got like four or five pitches he can throw at you. And that's rare for a young kid. I think he's a great football player, but if he's a terrible person, there's no way I know that. So it's tough to.
And what's even tougher is like in these 15-minute date dash environments, these players now have been so media trained and coached up now, like some of the answers, a guy like Mike Green can come across as robotic, right? He's just saying all the right things for 15 minutes. He can easily dupe you. And, you know, that's really a lot. The more I do this, the more I've learned that 50% of the evaluation is mental, DNA, Can I work with the guy?
Right.
You know, like Tatara McMillan from Arizona was my number one wide receiver all season long. I saw the interview where he says he doesn't love the game of football. I mean, I'm not taking a first round pick on that guy. Are you kidding me?
I didn't see that interview, but yeah, nobody told him. His agent didn't tell him. Hey, well,
this was a campus interview a couple years ago. He was probably still a freshman or a sophomore and doing one of these.
He wasn't even thinking NFL draft. He wasn't even thinking millions of dollars.
Yeah. And they asked him, they said, oh, well, don't you watch film? He's like, nah, I don't even really love football. Like, I don't.
I did. Now that you say that, I did see it. Yeah. He doesn't. Yeah. He doesn't watch film.
I think I haven't been a big fan of Tet McMillan. I'm not going to lie to you, Rick.
Well, and then you bring in the questionable speed. He's not really a polished route runner.
You know, he reminds me of Laquon Treadwell.
Yeah.
Like, he's a great contested catch guy, but he can't get separation. I don't want that guy.
Yeah, Laquon Treadwell is a good comparison. If you watch the UFL, he's very much like Hakeem Butler, an acrobatic.
Well, he was here. Vertical. Hakeem was here for a little bit with the Eagles. They tried to turn him into a tight end. Mm-hmm. I think the Ohio State kid is the best best wide receiver
in the
draft. And I think he's going to be a good player. That's something about that school and wide receivers in recent years. But
it's a great tree to pick an apple from.
Wide receiver U, Ohio State is becoming. And we'll see if that continues. Offensive line, because that's another position, as you mentioned, the trenches. Talked a little bit about Gray Zabel. What do you think? And he's a very safe pick. I agree with you. He's got five position versatility. I think he could play anywhere. He reminds me of Zach Martin. I'm not saying he's going to the Hall of Fame, but Zach Martin coming out, much higher level. That's part, you know, but he could play anywhere. He was a left tackle in college and he ended up being what he was. I get those similar vibes from Gray Zabel, but the two guys that I think might be in the mix, and I want to get your thoughts on them for the Eagles, are Josh Connerly and Donovan Jackson of Ohio State. Josh Connerly of Oregon. Where do you got those guys?
Yeah, Connerly, I'm not as high on as everybody else, and maybe it's the Mike Green truck play I saw in Mobile. Like, he just completely ran. I saw it live and in person. It's hard to get that play out of my head. It happens, though. I've seen it happen. But, you know, he's probably more of a right tackle than a left tackle. I think he's right tackle only. I don't think he has enough.
That helps with the Eagles because they're looking for
– Yeah.
Right guard, can you start at right guard? So, A, is he versatile enough to play guard early and then ultimately kick out the right tackle?
He could. I think Connerly is more of a tackle only, but I think Donovan Jackson would be ideal fit because he just did it on the left side for Ohio State, right? He was at guard, then kicked out the tackle. I like him much better at guard because of the footwork. He's got some choppy foot, doesn't stride wide. He takes these short choppy steps when you're playing left tackle at the NFL.
Yeah.
You might get beat a little bit more frequently, but he is going to be a stellar guard. And I'll tell you what, I mean, he's got a shot to play tackle, like, especially if he goes to Stoutland University and cleans up some of the technique, he could be a tackle down the road. So like Donovan Jackson, I think fits very, very good. I like Donovan Jackson. Josh Simmons, there's another guy with character. You hear, you know, and I know, like, he had a reckless driving incident a year or two ago where, you know, if you read the police report, he was very uncooperative, pretty much a jerk. And that's kind of what you hear from NFL scouts about the kid. So, like, there's a first-round talent that could slide into day two.
See, all that's
Trapilio doesn't get talked about out of Boston College. Now, again, he's just a right tackle only. But, I mean, this guy could probably come in and compete on day one, Ozzie Trapilio.
You saw the tragic incident with Kyron Lacy, Rick. I mean, you're around colleges all the time.
Yeah.
It is a problem with reckless driving. And I don't know how you fix it. But
Trevor Etienne, Ollie Gordon, like, you go through the draft Bible background reports. I can't tell you how many guys not only have, like, DUIs, but they were speeding 20 miles per hour over the speed limit. And, like, you hear, you know, you see Kyron Lacy. You remember Henry Ruggs. And how does that impact the guy's draft status? Like Etienne, I see people mock drafting him day two. They probably don't know about the background and the DUI and the reckless driving and speeding at 20, 30 miles per hour over the speed limit. Like, is that a guy you really want to invest millions of dollars into? Especially at the running back position, like Ollie Gordon, he's a dime a dozen. I could go find a million of those guys.
Right. Yeah. No doubt. It's a tough thing. There's so much of that stuff that exists too, that, you know, I think much of the general public doesn't see or consume. But Rick, I want to ask you about a couple guys on the defensive line that I like personally. I don't know if they're going to be there at 32, but they're two players I like. They're a lot of the guys have been talked about a lot in Philly. It's James Pierce, one. I think you have him third on your edge rusher rankings, which is pretty considerable, good for him. And then I like Walter Nolan at defensive tackle. Now, they're two defensive line guys. You kind of fall into the position of, you know, maybe you're getting the fifth of the sixth best defensive lineman in the class this year versus like a Malachi if you went that route. But I love both of those players. What do you see in those two guys, and how do you think they fit with the Birds?
Well, I will say, like, our guy Brian Baldinger actually likes Walter Nolan more than Mason Graham. So there's some love for Walter Nolan. You know,
I've heard a lot of love. I had Greg Cosell compare him to Jalen Carter. I'm like,
I think Carter's a little bit bigger. Nolan, I think, came in at 297 at the combine, which is a little light. And that's why, you know, I don't know if the Eagles like that kind of fit, sub 300 pounder.
Well, I'll take it at 32. I'm not taking it top 10.
Yeah, right. Well, and I'll say he adds an element of quickness, and like this guy could jump gaps up and down the line like in the blink of an eye. So, I mean, I think Walter Nolan's going to be a high impact player, you know. So I like him. He's my number two defensive tackle. And then, you know, James Pierce Jr., I mean, you talk about doing it in the SEC, 19 and a half career sacks, I think over 100 quarterback pressures, which tells me I'd like to see him learn how to finish a little bit more. And he's gonna pick that up because he has a pass rush repertoire. He's molded like an – I mean, he's got the ideal frame, 6 foot five, 245 pounds. He ran a 4.47 40. Like, there's no ceiling on this guy, but you got to coach it out of him. Like, that's part of the equation also is, like, coaching, game plan, how he's going to be implemented. You see a guy, Isaiah Simmons, I think he was the eighth overall pick. He's floating around free agency because, like, he goes to the Cardinals, there's no defined role. He comes to the Giants, they don't know how to use him. Like, he does a lot of different things very well, but he's a jack of all trades, master of none. And I think that's kind of the category you get into there.
Yeah, with a guy like Pierce, you know, Rick, I'm a big SEC guy. Obviously, I went to Bama, so I just love watching SEC football. He's an impressive player. I mean, he produced at such a high level. My one concern, and I would ask you as a draft expert how you view this, is he dominated in college based on sheer athleticism. Like, you saw him sometimes just run around tackles to go home and get a sack. Now, that's great. In the NFL, that's not going to happen as much. You got to be a little bit more polished, a little bit more technical, have good technique, things like that, fundamentals. Does that scare you at all? Does that type of thing, you know, if you win in college on pure athleticism, that's great. It shows you how athletic you are, but it's not necessarily translatable to the NFL in many cases. How do you view that?
Yeah, you know, it's a good lesson to be learned here because, and I'll say in the SEC, it means more, right? But
yeah, I agree with that.
Sure. One of my biggest misses ever, a few years back, I went down to Charlotte. I spent like two whole days with Alex Highsmith getting to know him and his family and his coaches. And I'll tell you what, like, I got fooled because he had no pass rush moves. It was all high motor, relentless effort, fall down, keep going, chase the ball carrier, chase the quarterback. I said, this guy, like, he's just getting by off of relentless motor and athleticism. Right, yeah. There's no pass rush repertoire here. He's a nobody.
That's why I like Mike Green. That's why I brought up Mike Green. He's got all these moves and counter moves.
And then look at Highsmith now. Like, he's had some seasons where you know, that motor shows up. He's getting after the quarterback. He's doing double-digit sacks. Like, he's been a productive pro. So I would say it used to scare me more than it does now because I've learned from that player there. But, you know, when you do it in the SEC and you get, you know, 20 sacks over the last two or three years in the SEC, that means he's doing something right. And I'm not a big stat guy, but I will tell you a lot of the old-time scouts do believe in terms of pass rush, stack production, transfers over at the P4 level, P5 level, it transfers over to the NFL. I'm not telling you that's what I believe. I'm just telling you that old school scouts believe.
Right. There's a line of thinking out there that just like that. Gotcha.
Yeah, I always hear, because I hear it from guys, finishing is a trait. Some guys can't finish. And some guys can. But then, you know, here, Derek Barnett was a hell of a pass rusher in college. Never really translated that production. Good player, but didn't live up to the billing as a first-round pick. You know, talking – and you know from Baldy helps you out with the NFL draft Bible. So, Baldy's very close to Lane Johnson. Lane and Jordan Mailata licked their chops against speed guys. They're like, hey, come at us, man.
Yeah.
It's a counter. It's speed to power. It's the guys who can counter that are more difficult. And those are two of the best tackles in football. And they think it's a day off if you're just trying to run around them. Yeah, it's not gonna happen. That's why I get enamored with people like Green, but I don't know if he, I don't know about the background stuff. That's the difficult part. That's the more, as you said, Rick. What'd you say? 50% mental, 50%, and I always correlated to people going on a job interview in their personal life. You're always trying to put on your best foot forward. You're not telling the truth. You're trying to tell them what you think they want to hear. No different in the NFL.
Yeah. These guys, they do have some investigative.
That's where Dom comes in and you talk to the coaches and the
people. And that's why, like, when you go to the campuses, you want to get to the trainer. The trainer usually shoots you straight. You want to get to the cafeteria worker because they're going to shoot you straight, right? Mm-hmm. You want to talk to like Alex Highsmith. I went and hung out with his parents in the parking lot before the game. See who his entourage is, who his friends are. Like, you get a feel that way more so sometimes talking to a guy one-on-one, right? Like,
What shapes a player. That's what shapes a man, you know, what he has going on around him. Rick, real quick, man, I want you to talk to me about tight ends a little bit. I know we talked about Tyler Warren. You know, I've seen some people putting Colston Loveland in his category. I don't see that. I think Colston's a great player. I just don't see him in the Warren category. But I think both of those players are going to be out of the Eagles' range. When it gets to 3-6, you know, do you see major value for the Eagles to look for a tight end? I saw one person, I don't know if there's any merit to it, but he mocked Mason Taylor to the Eagles at 32. I'm like, at 32, maybe in round 2 or 3, but I don't like it at 32. What do you see from tight ends 3-6 and any good fits for the Eagles, you think?
Well, you know, sometimes we have too much time on our hands waiting around for this draft. I mean, I like Mason Taylor, but 32 is a little too rich for me.
Yeah, I agree.
I know he's got the strong bloodlines, and I mean, this guy ran the gauntlet drill at the combine probably better than anyone I've seen in my life, wide receivers included. Like,
he walked that line perfectly.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
But I will say, like, I love Colston Loveland. I got much love for Colston because he played the entire season injured and hurt and still did great. He reminds me of Heath Miller, okay? Now, I don't think he's anywhere close to what Tyler Warren can do. I mean, this guy is a monster and just a whole different tier. But you're right. They're both, like, the Colts, the Chargers, they'll both probably look at Colston Loveland. Warren, I think, could go to the Jets. Right there in the top 10. Mason Taylor, like, but day two is the sweet spot. I love the tight end class. I think there's great depth. Mason Taylor is my number three guy. Again, 6'5", 250. He ran a 4.65 40. So in terms of size, traits, athleticism, he was underutilized at LSU. They did a lot of underneath dinks and dunks, safety valve option plays to Mason Taylor. So he wasn't really utilized there in the Tigers offense. I think he's going to be a much better pro than collegiate player. I do see second round for him. Elijah Arroyo from Miami, again, one of the fastest guys, somewhat of a one-year wonder. He had like 6 catches for his whole career coming into the season, then came out of nowhere. But this guy was a blur down in Mobile. I think someone's going to roll the dice on him in round 3. He's my number 4 tight end. Mitchell Evans out of Notre Dame. This is a plug-and-play starter, solid starter, not a Pro Bowl guy. He's not going to dominate. He's not going to be this huge impact player, but he can block. He can catch. He's got multiple years of starting experience at Notre Dame. So again, Mitchell
can run the quarterback sneak. I love that. I love that.
Yeah, and I'll give you Terrence Ferguson from Oregon is a guy way under the radar, maybe round three, round four. You know, Harold Fannin out of Bowling Green was one of the more disappointing players in the combine process. I'm curious to see where he goes. I'll give you one sleeper, though. Luke Lachey out of Iowa. This guy had like an ACL 2 years ago. Before that, Iowa's put out some pretty good tight ends. This guy was being talked about as a first-round pick. Now, I don't know what the medical looked like, but at 6'5", 251 pounds, ran a 4.77 coming off the injury. Like, he's probably going to slide down to day three.
Yeah, that sounds like an Eagles move there, Rick.
Luke Lachey is a guy like Dallas Goedert. He's going to outplay a lot of the tight ends that go before him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I get a lot of Zach Ertz comparisons with Loveland, which would be – you know, good, but you're talking more of a receiving tight end, I think, than the more well-rounded, which is Tyler Warren. So it's kind of what flavor do you want? That Harold Fannin, remember the Eagles hired Scott Leffler, the former head coach of Bowling Green, to be their new quarterbacks coach. So if anybody knows Harold Fannin, it's going to be him. But he's so small. I think, you know, the Eagles is a run first
team. Ball and slow.
Yeah, so
combination.
I'm not sure that's a fit. Who was the guy who ran the gauntlet great last year? I think it was Coleman, right?
Keon Coleman. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, he did that. And so you're right about Mason Taylor. That's the guy I'd like for the Eagles, but I can't take him at 32, and he's not going to be there at 64. So you're in kind of no man's land unless you make a bunch of maneuvers.
But I think tight end, I would, if I was the Eagles, I'd probably wait till day three, right? And like we said, that round four, there's going to be a guy there right in that sweet spot, and maybe you give up one of those fifth-round picks to go get him. Aronde Gadsden is another guy out of Syracuse, NFL bloodline, started as a wide receiver. If you want a receiving option threat kind of guy, Aronde Gadsden out of Syracuse, 6'5".
What do you think of two guys. All right. If I'm thinking day four, I'm going to give you two guys. Gunnar Helm and Thomas Fedone.
Yeah. So Helm, I mean, this guy's tough as nails. If you saw that ankle bruise that he suffered on that first 40-yard dash attempt, he went through with all the drills and the combine testing, and that toughness shows up on film. He's tough to bring down after the catch. He finds the open seam. He's not afraid to go across the middle, and he's also an adequate blocker. Like, he can play in line, so I like that pick. I have him right now as who are we talking about?
Gunnar Helm.
I have him at 14. I have him on. I have him as a seventh round grade. It's a deep tight end class. Thomas Fedone, I have a fifth round grade, and like I saw him at the Senior Bowl. I said, "Who is this refrigerator looking boxy frame?" I mean, you look at this guy. He's a condor. 34 inch arms, 83 inch wingspan. Like, this guy is just long and boxy, and then he goes to the combine and he jumps 35 and a half inches in the vert, 10'5" broad, great short shuttle times. Like, you go watch the film over there at Nebraska, he's making all these extension plays and athleticism, and you would never think that from looking at him walk off the bus. He's just a big box. He looks like a refrigerator, this guy, and then he goes out and just makes all kinds of plays. I'd say Helm's blocking, though, is a little bit more further along than Thomas Fedone is at this point. But intriguing. Yeah,
the only thing, because you mentioned the athleticism, he was like a big-time high school prospect, Thomas Fedone. He was like, I think he was the top tight end in the country. It was like LSU, Michigan, schools like that were recruiting him, and it just never developed. But you see the Eagles, they like that trait, and they think they can develop players. So
Here's one guy I'm going to throw out there. Like, when they do the rookie mini camp invites after the draft, there's a kid at the College of New Jersey, TCNJ. Not too many players. Thomas Burke. Okay, I saw him at the Tropical Bowl, And I got to admit, guys, I really wasn't too familiar with this game. I had all these NFL scouts coming up to me because they know I'm from Jersey. I was so embarrassed. They're like, what's the deal with Thomas Burke? What's the 411? I said, I'm trying to find out myself. At 6'4", 250 pounds, this guy, you know, the Tropical Bowl, these are day three free undrafted free agent types. But he, you know, cream rises to the top. And he was clearly a cut above everybody else. And I know I can tell you, like, there is some legit NFL interest in Thomas Burke out of TCNJ. I don't think he gets drafted, but he's a local kid. When you do these rookie mini camps, you're trying to find a diamond in the rough. That's a guy I could see the Eagles bringing.
That's an interesting name. I'll tell you what, I appreciate all the breakdowns, Johnny Mack. I appreciate the names you brought up. If this is the plan to replace Dallas Goedert, I don't like any of them, all right? I need Mason Taylor or Roy, somebody a little higher up, but we'll see. Last one for me, Rick. We appreciate you doing it, brother, all the extra time you've given us today. You're one of the very best in the business at the draft, so we appreciate you joining here.
Thanks.
Skid Marks, our guy on the chat, checked in. He said, J-Mac, and I'll switch it to Rick. Why do you think that this draft class is so weak compared to the last four or five drafts? One, do you agree with that, Rick? And if you do or don't, why or why not?
Well, I think you have to understand where the question is coming from. Are you talking about up top of the draft, or are you talking about the draft as it is all-encompassing? I think it's a very deep draft. I mean, you look at defensive line, edge rushers, tackles. We just talked about tight ends. There's plenty of depth. So from that standpoint, there's a lot of talent. But when you talk about blue-chip talent, there's very little. Like, I see Travis Hunter. I see Abdul Carter Jr. And really, that's it in terms of blue-chip talent. And you don't have the franchise quarterbacks that are sexy and luxurious that everybody's talking about all the time. So I think people don't see six first-round quarterbacks. They don't see a lot of blue-chip talent. And they say, oh, it's a weak class. Yeah, it's weak up top, but it's strong, especially in the middle and even late. So I think there's depth. I just don't think there's top-tier quality.
Right. Still a good draft, though. Rick, great stuff, man. We appreciate you joining. Make sure you guys follow him at Rick Saratella. Go to allaccessfootball.com. I'll put that in the chat as well. Allaccessfootball.com. Put your email in and access the NFL Draft Bible. I'm looking at it on my screen right now. It's as good as it gets when it comes to breaking down the NFL draft. So, Rick, we appreciate you, brother. Best to do it. Thank you, man.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks a lot.
There's Rick Saratella joining us here on Birds 365. Excellent job by Rick. Johnny Mac, I love getting Rick on. Good breakdown of the draft, man. It's going to be interesting. 9 days out from this thing, Johnny Mac. A lot to talk about, a lot to speculate on, but we'll see how it shakes out 9 days from now.
Yeah, and kind of just what Rick said at the end, up top, but 20 to 50, I think that's where you're going to make your hay. And look, like I said, there's a give and take. You want to win the Super Bowl, but typically you don't want to draft at 32nd, you're behind everybody else. It just makes sense, and that's part of the penalty of being successful. This year, the penalty is not as great as it usually is because there's not really blue-chip talent. Now, I'm with Rick. There's two blue-chip players in this draft, and one of them is you got to pick a position.
Yeah, it's
Travis Hunter and it's Abdul Carter, and that's it. And that is very weak at the top. The quarterbacks are weak. Rick's a little bit higher on him than I am. I Cam Ward, I think he's the fourth best quarterback if he's coming out last year. And he's going to be the number one overall pick. Shedeur Sanders, I've talked to a lot of people who don't even think he belongs in the first round.
Yeah.
Now I believe
Rick had a high grade on him, man. Rick had him above.
Yeah, Rick likes Rick. I don't think anybody I've talked to likes Shedeur more than Rick. And a lot of it is which by the way is important. And people in Philadelphia should know this. The intangible part of it, the leadership part of it. He talked a little bit about that. You know, people tend to overlook that. I'm just talking from a pure trait standpoint.
Right.
He doesn't have first round level physical gifts. Doesn't mean he can't turn into a great quarterback. But again, you're looking for value typically at the top of the draft. I'd still be stunned if he goes to the Giants at three.